From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in time-sensitive Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Ryan Adams, junior producer at Corgi Art House, to discuss game production. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Cool. Welcome, Ryan, to the show.
Hello. Hello.
When we first started talking a little bit before recording, you were talking about how prepared you were for how you like read all of our information on, and when we give people interviewers information stuff. Not everybody reads those, but the interviews always come out great. But we do appreciate.
Yeah, we do a whole spiel. Stuff. We have instructions for how guests enter the Discord channel we record in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever technical hiccups that might face along the way.
Yeah.
And we're recounting all of that, you know, for, you know, how we do things.
Right.
Ryan's like, I know.
Yeah.
So, well, he is a producer.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, anyone's going to read the instructions. It's going to be. It's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. And no shade on the other guests we've had.
Of course.
But it caught us all by surprise.
I mean, honestly, I was unfamiliar with all of the instructions we had on the thing. So I was being.
And he helped write them.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan can catch you up later, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
So, Ryan, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do?
I'm Ryan. I'm a junior producer at Corgi Art House, and we do like, we're like a production house. So it's like, freelancing but as like a team, and we do lots of 3D contracts, some 2D contracts, and it can be in games or AR. We've done some AR, or if a client just needs like an environment built or characters built, we do lots of that type of stuff.
All right, cool. Can you explain for listeners who aren't me, because I definitely know what production is, can you give us a little more context as to, oh yes, Ellen, why are you raising your hand?
Sorry, I have to interrupt and ask a question that's not important. Is there actually a corgi involved in the team?
Yes.
At Corgi?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yes.
No further
My
questions.
Boss named after a corgi that he had, and one of our artists also has a corgi as well.
Very good. I think this is important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah, okay.
It'd be a little false advertising if you didn't have a corgi involved somehow.
I like how the question wasn't important until we heard the answer, and then now it matters.
That's how we get some people in. They're like, corgi? Mm-hmm. And it's real?
Good advertisement, yeah. So yeah. Can you explain to listeners what how you would define game production?
Game production is the wonderful world of like force multiplying, like you're trying to make sure that people are efficient, but also you're trying to deal with uncertainty because it's bound to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like formulating plans and philosophies to be able to get through a very uncertain process. That's how I see it, at least. Because especially in like creative fields, like things are bound to not go exactly the way you plan them. So, yeah. You know, production's about how you put like a framework and a team and a cohesion in place so that you can get through those types of things. You can get through the process. Good. So, yeah, that's how I would describe it.
But you said that you were a junior producer. What is the difference between a junior producer and other producers?
I would say that a junior producer is probably someone who's like, you know, more entry level. They're still learning stuff about it.
So the
I'm
same
still
way
learning
you,
stuff about it.
The same way you would say like a junior programmer would still, I guess, potentially be learning certain things, whereas a senior programmer maybe ahead of, okay.
It's that a you know, it's a craft. So you gotta learn it.
I was curious because I think other fields sometimes will like have very explicit definitions for what senior versus junior.
Right, these tasks belong to this rank.
Yeah.
These tasks belong to this higher or lower rank or whatever.
You could ask somebody else and they'd probably say something different, but that's just how I see it.
Sure.
Yeah, so. It might be different at different companies and maybe even on different projects. That actually, I'm really curious about that because as a sort of a freelance house, you probably have more experience with more different types of projects. And so I bet it's like for a producer, it's probably a lot more crash course experience in the diversity of project types than you'd get at a traditional studio that's producing a game every 2 or 3 years or even managing multiple teams. Can you talk a little bit about like, I mean, I guess let's just dig into it. Like how do projects start and how do you define what it is when you get going?
They'll sound like two different questions.
Well, sometimes we do that here.
Because I was like, I'm going to answer, but what am I answering?
Well, okay, let's just talk about the sort of range of work that you do. And like the what's the smallest project you have that's come across your desk? And what's the biggest, say, in the past year or two?
You gave us kind of an overview of the types of work that you do. But like, what shape does that take? Are you talking about like projects that are just a couple weeks, a few months, a few years? Does it run the range? Yeah, give us a little bit more detail.
Right. Smallest project is probably like an AR filter that you get on like Instagram. Like our business card has one of those in it.
Okay.
That's another thing that gets people. If you show them the AR tracker on the business card and there's like a corgi and you can make it play fetch with a ball and things like that. Just like something to like see we got you again. Something to kind of like, you know, show a little of what we can do. The largest project that I've worked on, though, is, I mean, it's still going, but I joined Courtyard House in, like, October 2022, like, right before I graduated, because I graduated in 2023. And, we're still on, like, the end of that, because we helped, like, create a bunch of characters for a game that's hoping to come out this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, we did it for this you can wishlist it on Steam, but it's this Blood on the Thames, kind of like it's kind of point and click mystery horror in like old, what I call old-timey England, because I never remember the term for it correctly. So yes, that's probably the longest one that I worked on, because that was like one of the first things that I got onto when I got to Courtyard House. So it's been almost 2 years at this point. So that's the longest one that I've been on. So it's a wide range of things.
Okay.
So does the scope of the project, like those two examples at the sort of either ends, does that define what your tasks are? Does it change the size of the teams and then means that you do different things? Or how does that experience change from project to project for you?
As far as the scope of it, sometimes it's stuff that I don't really have to like think too hard about, because it's something that we've usually done a bunch of times. Cause
sure.
As far as like the core team that we have, I'm probably the newest member. No, I'm not. I'm the second newest member. And, but as far as when it's like a bigger scope, we can like expand our team. We have like certain other people that we can call in.
Mm-hmm.
And so those ones, I definitely have to be like more cognizant of like what I'm doing and how I'm setting this up, and like who am I checking on each week for progress, and like who am I trying to help them progress. So it's really just like a thing that you have to kind of set checkpoints for yourself to kind of like, okay, reset and think about, okay, where's this person at? Where's this person at? Are they having issues? What kind of feedback is this person giving? And how can I give that to my boss and figure out how we can make that better? So,
right. That requires a whole lot of organization in order to keep all of those things, you know, together. I'm curious what kind of tools you use to like keep all of those things organized. I'm imagining a lot of spreadsheets. But like maybe there are fancy spreadsheets for producers. I don't know. I don't know.
Spreadsheets.
Yeah, context. Steven loves spreadsheets. Just for context.
Okay. Yes. There we go. Okay. We got. We have a couple of spreadsheets, but
okay.
I think since our team is on the smaller side, we're like the core team's like less than 10, and then maybe if we like expand to like full capacity of like everyone that we've ever worked with, it'd be like a little bit more than 10. So I mostly use ClickUp.
ClickUp.
The project, it's a project management software. It's kind of like Jira. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, I've used Asana before, but I don't use Asana for this job. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it's just something light. It's fun. It's colorful. Sure. It helps me like make it I don't know, like fun in my head.
Yeah, sure.
So I can keep going.
Like a time tracker? Is it like a task tracker kind of tool, or is it more like more involved than that?
Yeah, it's a task tracker tool. I think since we're a small team, it's like we don't need like a big stockpile of anything. So it kind of makes it really easy for me to move between things. We also use a lot of Google Drive, like docs and sheets and things of that nature. But I'd say those are probably what I use. And we use a lot of Discord as well, of course.
Yeah.
We use all of that. And occasionally we'll use Slack if we're like working with a client like very directly. Mm. Just lots of the tools for organization.
I'm curious if you could rank Asana and ClickUp and Jira in your order of preference, how would you rank them? This is not like a quiz question. I'm just curious. Since you've used all three.
Well, I haven't used too much of Jira. Mm-hmm. I can't even say that I'm really like a beginner at Jira. I just understand the concept of Jira because like it's like everywhere in job descriptions. So I'm just like, okay, we've got to learn something about this. Between Asana and ClickUp, though, that one's interesting. I'd probably do ClickUp 1 and then Asana 2. ClickUp's it's the UI, it's the colors. I like the colors.
Colors make a difference.
Yeah, there's something about your tools that is to be pleasant to use feels like an afterthought when you're making them.
Yeah.
But when you're actually using them, does matter quite a big deal. It's one of the reasons why everyone hates Jira is it's ugly and it's not intuitive. Yeah. Even when you're an expert, it never feels good to use. You're never satisfied.
Yeah, and it feels like that complexity is specifically meant for like people who are meant to use that tool and not other people who need to use the tool periodically, like everybody else.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of frustrating.
Well, that's a question is how often do you, with the teams you work on, because I imagine you're probably very flexible as a team because of the size that you're at. Are you the one who's dealing with the project management workflow or do other people kind of, are they actually clicking in the software and then that, you know what I mean? How important is it to you that you're it's your domain versus that everyone has a visibility and access to it?
I am the main watcher of the ClickUp. Mm-hmm. I am the realm master of the ClickUp. the team members, they can look at the ClickUp. They can tell me what the status is. I am the mover of the tasks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the one doing the task, but I'm the completer of the tasks.
Right.
I'm the main watcher of the ClickUp. I probably even watch the ClickUp more than my more than like my boss does, because he's got like all of the other things to do.
Sure.
But yeah, that's probably the thing that I have like the most control of in my role specifically.
Okay. I'm actually curious about this because now I'm starting to feel bad because I move my ticket sometimes because I'm like, I did this task, so I'm going to finish it. but is that annoying? Because you maybe want to be able to keep track of what's actually happening and when it happens.
That's the thing. Like they don't really move them. Like they're like in there just so that they can get like notifications and such. But I'm the one that's moving it.
Is that an established rule that you have to move them? Nobody else can move them,
or is that just the culture there?
Yeah.
It just kind of happened. Those were the vibes, and we just kind of ran with those.
Oh, okay. Okay, so maybe I'm not.
I was just like, this is fun. And I like this. And they was like, you know what, you can keep doing that. But it could be different rules for different places.
Okay.
You know, as long as it's communicated between the parties, like what's going on here.
Okay.
Good. I have definitely heard that there are some places where it is actually important that like there isn't a lot of hands in the pot.
Okay.
But then of course other teams where it's like whoever's responsible for the thing is then responsible for the metadata on the thing.
Yeah.
And so it probably totally does vary from team to team.
Yeah. Okay.
So, it sounds as though it just happened naturally, but it is perhaps your preferred way, ultimately.
It could be.
Yeah.
I'd maybe have to experience it the other way.
Sure.
People are just moving things at a whim. And there's too many cooks in the kitchen. It could be. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure, though.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it depends on your team and how things work. Like, if I ask my team to move things in Jira on their own. So they're in there hosting their own updates. They're moving the tickets across the board. But we have a really different workflow than your standard game development team would, because we're not a game development team. At least not the team that I'm on right now. Mm. So things are moving like a lot more frequently maybe than they would be on your board. It probably just depends a lot on what the team's doing. But we can all agree it's fun to move cards from one column to the next.
You know, it is.
I love this multi-select. Complete. done.
It's satisfying.
Like, yes.
Efficient.
I always feel a little nervous about it sometimes because, like, if I move something complete, I'm the only programmer at Future Club. So if I move something complete, people just assume it's done, which, I mean, is fair.
That's the whole idea.
But I want somebody to, like, double check it. We have a review tab, I think, column or whatever. So I always put my stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens is during stand-up, we'll be like, Steven, did you do this thing? And I'll be like, yeah, but I would like y'all to review it. And then, like, we do it at the meeting maybe, but it's just I tell them what I did. And then they're like, okay, it's complete. But they don't actually see it.
Yeah,
sometimes.
To do, doing, and done is not enough columns.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, even when I was working in video production, we never used any formal software. We actually just used spreadsheets with, like, checkboxes and stuff. But it was a very similar thing, like a Kanban board. And we definitely had, like, three different, like, draft, review, re-edit columns, because it was, like, always the case where if you knew it wasn't done, but you made a lot of progress, and there was no way to show that.
Right.
So you needed to have some sort of system for that. But also when you were done and didn't want to think about it anymore, but it wasn't approved yet, you needed it out of your head. And so you needed it out of that column.
Yeah.
So there's, and you know, every project, every team does it differently. And who is responsible for moving that around? Because one of the things I definitely like to do with a board like that is I will, before I move things over to the point where it's out of my brain, because it's important to me. When it's off that column, I don't have to think about it anymore.
Right, exactly.
And so what that means is if it's, and particularly in game development where, like, everything is so interconnected, like, fix this bug is a great little card to move, but, like, implement this feature is not, because on your way to implementing it, you've interpreted the design a little differently. Now you need to split it into three different tasks. But you're busy doing it, so you haven't done that yet. But then it's time to move it over. You have to catch yourself, be like, oh, right, I implemented this, but it brought up two things I need to do that are not on the board yet.
Yeah.
And so I can't move this yet, even though it's done.
Yeah.
And so you need to kind of spend a little time, and that's where having project managers and producers can really help you out, because they can be the ones that decide what that looks like.
Right.
When it is just you or a smaller team without a sort of, the nice blanket of a production team to sort of help you interpret that stuff, it can be really, really tricky. And then the less disciplined you are about that, the worse it's going to be later.
Yeah.
Right?
It's difficult because, like, at least a Future Club, Franny serves as CEO and producer and also biz dev. So she's doing a lot of stuff. She can't do all the stuff at full capacity all the time. And so, like, we end up having to do some of the things with, like, me having to move the cards. And so, like, I guess we have to decide on how we're going to do it. It's honestly super valuable to have somebody who can just be like, did you do all the things you need to do? Is there something blocking you from doing these things? What can we do to make this better for you? This thing is done. I'll move the card. Because then, then somebody gets that satisfaction moving the card too. I don't necessarily need, I just need the task done, frankly. Moving the card is nice, as Ellen is gesturing about, really excited. But, but it's nice to have somebody else to do that kind of stuff, because then it's not on your mind and you can just focus on doing the things that you are getting paid to work on. Mm-hmm. So the extra stuff. So thank you for that.
Another thing in there is, like, sometimes you just got to be able to, like, trust the team member to just, like, operate.
Right.
Because one of the things that I try not to do is, like, overmanage, like, micromanage.
Yeah.
Because that's not, because the person knows what they're doing, like, in 80, 90% of scenarios. they probably know what they're doing. So if you're like micromanaging them, that can be inefficient in itself.
Right.
Because now you're like making this process more complicated than it needs to be. When sometimes you just need to be able to trust that person to just operate because you've built such a good process and rapport that you can just go efficiently.
Yeah, yeah. Part of the job of a producer, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not a producer, is to like establish that rapport, like you were saying, establish that trust, so that when you get to that, you know, 10% of stuff that maybe a person doesn't know how to do, and they maybe need help from somebody else on their team or some other way, they can come to you to ask for that help, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Does that come up often, you think?
It does come up, but usually my higher up, because like he's also like CEO, founder.
Okay.
Like he handles like the financials and things of that nature.
Sure.
Usually like he can get through most of it with me like assisting him in helping like, you know, remove that roadblock or improve that process. So
sure.
Which is why I'm a junior and not a lead yet.
But not yet.
Why I'm a junior right now.
Mm-hmm. Soon. Maybe. I don't know. I have
at
no idea.
At some point. Because that could be any time.
I have a question that maybe, I'm not sure if producers at, probably producers at different quote unquote levels would have different answers to this. But I really wanted to ask you about that, the micromanaging thing. Because I think like, you probably ask a bunch of people, is micromanaging good? And they'll say, absolutely not. It's really bad. But what is it, you know, what is the line? What is the difference? And so I was wondering if you could go into a bit more detail about how you see the difference between like checking in, keeping the team moving forward, and micromanaging people. And then I have a follow-up question for you after you speak on that point.
I would say that the difference, like the line for micromanaging to me is if it's like constant, but it's not like a good management level, I would say is like routine, but like expected, you know, like if you have like a weekly meeting with someone, you have like a weekly check-in with someone, that's like a good amount of management and you can just like let them do what they do best. I believe it becomes micromanagement when any piece of inefficiency is like cause for you to try and step in, like any little inefficiency.
Okay.
When it starts to affect maybe more pieces, maybe then that's a good time to like ask some questions and get some information. But if it's just like, you know, I don't know. They were just having a bad day or something. When it's like something to that nature and it's just one day, then it's like there's no need to like go too far in. There's no need to get too deep into that. It's just like normal human life stuff. It's just normal human stuff.
A bit of a follow-up to that, which is how do you You're not micromanaging, but you sounds like you do need to keep an eye on things because without stepping in. Because when someone's like, oh, they promised that thing today, but it didn't happen. I don't know exactly why, but I trust there was a reasonable reason. I'm going to leave them alone. But then that's going to affect tomorrow a little bit. And so you have to make sure that you give them that slack because you understand why tomorrow is going to be harder for them. But then also, and maybe adjust things on your side. So, you know, that requires you to essentially have the attention of a micromanager, if not the you know the it's not stepping in like one. So how much of it is not stepping in, and how much of it is really just leaning back and not having your eye on everything?
Right. It's kind of just like the awareness. Like I think there's like two steps to it. Essentially, there's like the awareness of something that could be happening, but then there's also the decision that you make. Whether or not to step in or ask a question, or whether or not to just kind of, you know, have that trust to just be like, I trust them to, even though they might not be exactly where I want them to be, I trust them to be able to either recover or, you know, get kind of over the hump per se. So it's like, yeah. As long as like, you could have the awareness of a micromanager, it's whether or not you act on that awareness or not.
Right.
Where I feel like that's when it becomes micromanagement versus just having the awareness of one per se.
It's like, while you were talking about this, I don't know why, maybe it's because I've been watching a lot of House recently. But like, I imagined like a patient in a hospital room who has a bunch of equipment that's like attached to them that just gives like reads out vital signs and explains how much medication they're getting and the rate of that medication dosage. And like people are coming in there and they're checking on things frequently. Right. And that's kind of what you're doing when you're talking about it. It's like you're checking on things really frequently, but if you were adjusting something all the time, like, there would never be a chance for like the patient's systems to like reach an equilibrium and like, you know, you'd always be messing with things. And it kind of seemed like the same kind of action to you.
Right.
Like you're going in there, you're checking on the vitals. You're like, okay, blood pressure's a little high, but not dangerous. We're good. I'll come back in an hour.
It's kind of like the routine thing I was talking about. Like it's routine and it's like very measured. It's not like reactionary or anything.
Right.
But like another example that I like to think of, because I like sports, is because apparently, according to my dad, I wanted to be a sports coach growing up and not a player. But like, there's only so much instruction a coach can give before the players have to go out there and do the thing, whichever sport it is. Like, and sometimes, and I've seen this in games, like if they give too much instruction, that can actually hurt them. So it's kind of that just ability of like, you've kind of given them the instruction and the platform, and you just gotta let it play out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like that's like another analogy that I kind of like to, and it's also somewhere where I pick up like people management skills, like, you know, watch like Ted Lasso and that helps people, and I read articles on like coaches and things and like how they manage certain people in certain situations. So that's kind of like, you know, it's an analogy, but it's somewhere that I pull for like those leadership skills as well.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, to translate a sports analogy to a game analogy, because we're nerds here. I like that you brought up like how players could get instructions, but they aren't like doing things while they're getting instructions. And I think that lies true with work in general. Like if you're in a meeting, you can get things done during a meeting, right? But like that work that you're doing is specific for like discussion purposes and like setting up things and understanding people and what things need to get done and things like that. But you're not doing the other work that needs to get done, the actual like programming or drawing or music making or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah.
So like there has to be a balance between those two. Otherwise you're just sitting, you're spending all your time doing stuff and none of it actually gets like compiled into something that is worth anything. Or you're spending all your time talking about doing a thing, but not actually doing the thing. So I think, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That really made it make sense to me.
Yeah, like a meeting could be a half an hour, mm-hmm. and that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's an hour, things could get done better.
Yeah,
but you've lost a half an hour.
Right.
So like,
yeah.
So maybe it's not actually a win.
Yeah.
Do you always need to? You always need to adjust, because sometimes meetings can be like 5 minutes. Like sometimes I have meetings scheduled for 30 minutes, just in case. But then like I get in there with the art. I do some like weekly check-ins with our like artists and things of that nature. And sometimes we only really need 5 minutes to get through what we're getting through. And maybe we'll like talk about something else, like how are your dogs doing, or like what like other things are you up to?
Yeah.
And,
well, that's part of building a rapport, right? So there's that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, you know, sometimes you need 30 minutes, sometimes you need 5, sometimes you need somewhere in between. So it's just all about, you know, making sure that when you realize it, that you actually realize it and don't just like ignore it off and try to extend something that doesn't need to be extended.
Right. Yeah, I'm really starting to realize how valuable it is to just have, as just a worker, to just have that kind of stuff off your plate. Like as indie devs, you know, we have to balance a bunch of different things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it would be kind of nice if I could just like do code and not have to think about everything else that goes into a game.
Yeah.
I say that now, but I would hate just doing code. but currently, that's where I'm leaning towards. That's really cool to hear. So I'm curious how you like determine the scope of projects and what your involvement in that process is like. Because I know that like at least at Future Club, like our producers are really heavily involved in like determining whether or not something is, you know, too much in scope or how long this might take, or like even just asking that question to the people who need to be asked that question. So I'm curious, like, how you are involved in like that scoping process.
Yeah, I would say that that's something that, you know, I'm still learning a bit about, because I mostly do that with my boss.
Sure.
And so like that's kind of a collaborative effort between us, because he's like also head of production, because, you know, he's supposed to be helping me as well as like the other artists. And also he has a better feel for these processes, because he's just been like in the game for longer. Mm. But I always make sure to like try and pick some things up about like the scope and how long does it usually take them to do a character, since we've done lots of projects since I've been here. So
yeah,
it's just like having that familiarity with what the timelines usually are, and then being able to like communicate those timelines to the client.
Yeah. Okay.
And
right, because you're mostly client based work, so I guess that changes things too.
There's two halves to it. There's the determining how big should this project be.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a collaboration with a client. Sometimes a client will have a brief.
Yeah.
But then the other is like budgeting, which is what the actual scope is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's regardless of who determines, who makes the big decision about how big a project should be.
Yeah.
You know, there's still the scoping out the how many people does this thing require?
Mm-hmm.
Or turns out we don't have enough people to spare. Can we go back and reduce the scope? Is the client going to like that? That sort of thing.
Right.
So I guess that's the next line of questions, is about working with stakeholders, with clients. Yeah. That's a little different from a lot of other studio environments, but it's something that I think benefits anyone who is doing any kind of production, is like you have to satisfy a brief or a person or something, and that person may be internal or external, right? So how do you manage that?
Right. I have had a decent amount of responsibility in that. Because usually we will get, so for example, we can get put in like a Slack with like the main parts of our client's team. Mm-hmm. if they have like a side of it. And it's just me and my boss who are in that Slack. Like our artists aren't necessarily in that Slack all the time. So, and then there are also times where, you know, there was one week where we were working on an environment, and my boss was going to see his like parents, and it was just me, and I had to like go into like meetings with the clients, and they were giving like they were giving lots of feedback, and I have to communicate that back to our artist, and it would take a lot of time. So it's just like being able to listen, know what your, I guess, what your like standards are of like what you can do and what you can't do. Because that's a whole other thing of like, mm-hmm. when like clients ask for something that you just can't do. It's just like, it's just not possible. But it's not their fault, because they don't like, they might not know like the technical elements of it. So you kind of have to inform them of those like technical limitations if you have them. So yeah, it's just about like being knowledgeable about your process while also trying to cater to what the client is looking for, really. So yeah. It's a fine balance, and like I've had enough experience with it through like school and things like that. So
yeah, it sounds like the sooner you can get to know on something, the easier it will be. But also, I imagine there's probably a lot of like, how can I get to yes on this before you get to know, right? So there's a little tension there that happens internally. What happens when the client is not on the same page as you, either because they really want this thing you can't do, or they, you know, want you to do things in a way that you know won't be as efficient? They're trying to manage you.
Right. I would say that's, you know, that's again like one of those things that I haven't had too much experience with, but the like the handful of times that it might have happened, I like my boss has mostly been the one on the forefront of that. Yeah. Because again, like he knows more of the process inside out than I do.
Yeah.
And so like he has like a very good feel of like, yeah, we definitely can't do this. And if you do want us to do this, then you're gonna have to give us like more time or like more budget to like actually do so. So but yeah, that's kind of one of those things where it's like I'm picking up on it and I'm like learning pieces whilst it's happening. I'm getting the experience of it. So
right.
It's definitely something that, you know, it's an area of development, but like that involves conflict. So I don't know how to feel about wanting to get more experience.
Yeah, I suppose most of the producer's responsibility is to resolve conflict as smoothly as possible. So I can understand why you feel the instinct not to get into that as much.
Yeah, it's like I'm here to solve conflict, but that doesn't mean that I want conflict.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes it happens though.
Yeah, it's bound to happen. But if I can get through without conflict, I'll take that. I'll take that 7 days of the week, 365 of the year.
Yeah,
366 on a leap year. I'll take it every single every time.
Okay, so for this one, I'm going to play the role of Steven and say, hey, folks, fill out that feedback form.
Yeah.
Because I am role-playing as Steven now. I really want your feedback on the show.
Yep.
That's Steven talking. And one of the nice things about the feedback form is you can tell us very specific things, like, I like this type of episode, I like that type of episode, and that really guides the kinds of episodes we make. But you can also give us specific feedback. You can say, hey, this is a thing I really liked in particular. A question we didn't think to ask, you can give us answers for. Just general feedback. And also, you can say nice things. And we do kind of like that. And we do ask if you want to share them. We have some stuff here. A recent comment is saying that they love the programming topics that I've been bringing to the show, and they love the psychology of games and game-based learning stuff that Alan's doing. And then they also spelled your name wrong, Steven. So that's a perspective on all three of us that they provided. But also, we've been getting some feedback in the past year or so about our Nice Thinking episodes, which is the newest type of episode we've been doing. And someone specifically called out the Sledgehammer Ride episode, which was yours, as a big hit. And we like to hear that because it lets us know that we're doing it, that what we're doing is working.
Yeah.
And that's really important to hear. But also, do not be afraid of telling us what is not working.
Absolutely.
That is also feedback we will happily accept, because as game designers, it's a lesson that we are trying to teach our listeners. And so, you know, we got to learn it ourselves. And so, you know, bring down the hammer, spell all our names wrong at nicegames.club/feedback.
Don't spell my name wrong.
How do you make passwords that are strong enough so no one will guess them, you won't forget them, and find a way for everyone in your company to do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible, unless you have 1Password. Companies lose hours every day just from employees forgetting and resetting passwords. A single data breach costs millions of dollars. 1Password secures every sign-in to save you time and money. Any device, anytime. 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. Protect your global workforce with simple security, easy secret sharing, and actionable insight reports. Right now, listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/runoftech for your growing business. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/runoftech today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break. Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
There's always the thing with the, I like to call it the revision game.
Oh.
Where like it's you know, it can be fun, but sometimes it can be frustrating and you just gotta try and make it fun. But like it's when, like, you know, there will be a client that'll like give us a very good outline of what they want. And then we do it, and then now they want it to be something else.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
And then and then like sometimes it can just like keep going. And and you know, it's a fun little revision game. You know, and you know, you can take it positively or negatively if you want, but I decided to put some whimsy into it and just like make it positive. Glass half full. But
yeah.
I think that's essential. And actually, I think of it, I mean, I think about the relationships I've had as a project team member to the producers I've worked with. Their ability to frame that process in a positive way has a huge impact on how the team engages with the work. Oh. Right. If it's like, okay, more revisions, then it's like it influences everybody's mood around that. But the thing is, you mentioned this early on, it's a creative process. You make plans and then immediately you go off plan because no one's ever done this exact thing before. So that kind of revision isn't unexpected, and it isn't even necessarily a problem because, you know, your producers planned for that. So it's just like if you can get yourself into a headspace where you're embracing it and like even able to enjoy those revisions, you can have this kind of enjoyable back and forth with your customer where you're kind of discovering these, you know, the solution together. Certainly it can slog on and sometimes get to be a problem, but like your producer is checking in on that, looking at those vital signs frequently, and they'll know when it starts tipping over from, okay, this is fun and productive revision versus this is now nitpicking and we need to move on. You know,
right.
I guess that's my experience. Does that kind of align with what you've
had to? I like the how you frame it, because it's like you are, in some ways, you're like a representative. Like, so from the client side, you're like a representative of what your team can do.
Yeah,
because like you have to be informed of your own process of as like a producer, but then to your team side, you're kind of a reflection of what the client wants, and like what vision that client is looking for, and like, you know, like what type of aesthetics are they looking for, like what type of style do they want. You're kind of like a two-way door of like communication and framing of things and you know, deliverables and all that fun stuff. So, you know, if you can maintain that like positive, like we can do it, Bob the Builder mindset, then you can most certainly improve the environment that you're in. So
that's interesting framing, because I think it's really valuable to have a person who basically is the interfacing between the two different teams, because like you can have situations where like a person on the team ends up talking past like a client, and the client talks past a person on the team, just due to the fact that like they have different, I guess like different interest levels and skills with respect to what like is going on with the project. And so like it can make that back and forth very frustrating and unproductive when like people aren't quite communicating in ways that make like actual communication work. So like having somebody to have to interface between that is really valuable, and it sounds like, you know, you're doing a good job with that. It's just good.
It's the business background. I have a degree in business. That's what cool. I have a degree in. So you know, it helps. It helps for sure.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've found in my career is to provide incentives for a client to improve that communication on their end.
Yeah.
Because no matter how good you are at it, like, takes two to tango, right?
Right.
And so it's in games, it's different. In other things, it's different.
Sure.
And in work I've done, it's been different, you know, across. But one of the techniques I have used is say, this is how many revisions we get.
Okay. Yeah.
And we work that into the agreement, into the contract. Sometimes they can really define those, like if you're doing a graphic design job. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it needs to be a little looser. But like, sure. And what you can tell the client is that you can use those things for anything. Yeah. You can use them to discover something new, to change your mind, because I've agreed to do them already. I've already agreed to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm already promising you, you're not going to accept the first one.
Yeah.
If you do, miracle. But like, yeah. It saves us all time. It's not going to save you any money because we're agreeing on this in advance.
Right.
I mean, you can make a separate agreement, but and then use it for whatever you want. And so it incentivizes the client to use it as productively as possible.
Yeah.
If it's just a little tweak they're going to make, then they're going to run out of those pretty quick.
Yeah.
And that's something that you can also communicate with your team or your collaborators. You can say like, listen, we're making this thing. They're not going to like it.
Yeah.
It's not going to satisfy their brief because they're probably not telling us everything. Mm. They may not know everything,
right.
But that's part of the process. Mm. And I think that can be a little demotivating as a creative to start with.
Yeah.
But it may not be the best solution all the time, but I find that it does help on both sides. I don't know if that's a technique that works at the scale, Ryan, that you work at, but it's definitely worked for me because it also just makes things really clear. When stuff goes wrong, everyone's like, well, now I know what to do now. Mm-hmm. And then when those things run out, then it's like, okay, great. Now we're now past the scope of the agreement. Let's decide together what to do next.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you can be a little flexible. Sometimes they could be a little flexible. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's time to drop a new contract.
Yeah.
But it does make... You sort of have to plan for things not just to go wrong, but for like the process to not work.
Yeah.
And I think. And to be happy with that as part of the process, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, it doesn't always work. It doesn't always all line up perfectly like that. But
yeah.
As far as the like as far as incentives for the client thing, sometimes I feel like, because we also like offer like a set number of revisions.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel like it takes more of a form of like a revision pass. So like,
okay, sure.
Where you kind of look at the whole thing and then you kind of get like a list of things.
Yes.
And then that can be one revision. And then, that sort of thing. I know that my boss has also offered discounts depending on like what the like issue could be. So if it's like something that's purely on like our end, then it's like, okay, he might lower the price a little bit or something of that nature. But also it's something that could help you get the word of mouth of that client that you just worked with, so that they could maybe tell somebody else and then we can get like another job out of it. So there are, you know, there are many ways to look at it, and there are like benefits of kind of incentivizing the client with certain things as well. So yeah, I definitely like have experienced some of what you were talking about.
Yeah. And it's a, you know, a lot of that has to do with like contracts and money and hours and things like that. And that's very relevant when you're dealing with client work, but that same kind of framework can work internally on a team too. You can say like, this is the scope we have. We're going to take three cracks at this because we're very confident we'll get it right in three cracks. After that, we're moving on.
Mm.
And then, or we could decide that we need to refocus and change things. But that doesn't just have to be a framework you use with a business relationship. It could be something you use with a collaborative relationship as well. It's the terms are different and the process is different, and everyone gets to be, they get the benefit of being a little bit more flexible, and you can do other things to satisfy those things. But it does helpful to have that process as well when you're saying working with someone on something together, kind of knowing you're not going to get it right away, that you're going to make revisions internally. You can use some of that same sort of language, and you can write some of it down very specifically if you want to be really, you know, if that makes you comfortable,
right?
If it can get it out of your mind. Or you can sort of just think of it as a philosophy and kind of let it float.
Yeah. I like that. I'm imagining the revisionist game adding rounds to it. Like a best of five.
Ding, ding, ding,
right,
ding.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Level four.
Yeah.
Level five.
Just try to speedrun it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's important. That's why I appreciate like having you on the show to talk about like how important this work is, because like I think it's something that like doesn't get enough appreciation outside of like especially in the indie space, because like we, like I said, like I mean everybody knows this, we've had to like, you have to kind of handle all of these kinds of things yourself, and so like it becomes more difficult the more different jobs you have to manage, and having somebody who can help you manage all of these different things, frankly having a producer, I'm curious how it would feel to have a producer on like a otherwise two-person team, because like then you could still, like, somebody can help manage the time you're spending on the different aspects of game development, regardless of the fact that, like, you're the only person working on it, you know? You can have somebody make sure that you're doing the programming work that you need to do, while also making sure that you do the artwork that you need to do at certain intervals and at certain times, to keep things organized for your own sake and to make sure that you're reaching the goals that you set for yourself and that you set with the producer.
That's kind of like the basis of why I wanted to be a producer. Like,
okay.
Because like growing up, I had lots of creative friends, but all of my creative friends were like really disorganized, which like I related to a degree, but like I kind of like conceptually was more organized of like, you could do this and this. And like, and that's the basis of why I want to be a producer, because I want to help the like artists and the programmers and the people who are like super talented at what they do focus more on what they do, rather than having to focus on all of the craft of having to organize like a plan and processes and how to communicate to the client and get stuff out the way so that they can just focus on what they have to do.
Right.
And there's a whole role for it. So it's like, that's awesome. Cause that's kind of what I like to do anyways. It's just like, I like to help people out in doing what they do best.
Yeah.
What they have a passion for. Cause they don't have a passion for removing roadblocks. And in most cases, there are some people who know how to do all of it. And those people, I commend them. But, you know, in most cases, there are people that, you know, they need help. And I like helping. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like anything when you're in game development, you will put on two hats. And sometimes you really like having those two hats. It's like really satisfying.
Yeah.
Some of them are, sometimes it's you're a producer and a writer. Sometimes it's you're an artist and a programmer. Like, whatever. It doesn't, you know. But even for things you like doing, you do sometimes appreciate not having to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think one of the things I've always wished a freelance producer would do, because you're talking about small, really small teams.
Right. Yeah.
Who need a little bit of help, but they can't provide enough work for a full time producer.
Yeah.
It'd be great. Right. I mean, this is just the idea out there. Anyone can take it for free, is like, just offer yourself as a consultant and like take on like 15 teams.
Oh.
And do you know what I mean?
Cool.
And let them just keep track of their Kanban boards.
Yeah.
And like help manage them, and then just provide a small service for each one of those teams.
Yeah.
That can be, you know, mechanized for you. Like, I don't know how practical that is, but I've always thought that would be really useful. You know,
you're more of like a process coach or an agile coach or something like that. You come in when like you want to list, your team wants feedback on how they're working together.
Well, one of the reasons why small teams have the hardest time understanding this is a thing they need,
right,
is because sometimes when they're that small, they can do it themselves.
Yeah.
And they don't realize how much work that's taking out of them.
Right, exactly. And
so they can't appreciate the value of it. They can't, they don't understand how much further they could go with some help because they're skating by with just sort of not treating it like it's part of the job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They're able to do it, but they don't necessarily know if they're doing it well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
They're doing well as they could be doing it.
Yeah. And having somebody be able to, like, outsider looking in, be able to observe that and assess that and make judgment calls based off of that is, I think, super valuable. It's really difficult when you're one of the people's doing it.
It sounds like what, He's on LinkedIn, and I went to one of his. He had a. I think this is what like Benjamin Karchich does. I think.
Oh, I'm
pretty sure. Yeah,
it does exist.
yeah. Well, because he's someone that I follow on LinkedIn. He drops a lot of knowledge. He had a talk at GDC that I went to. He had like a mini class that I took. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like he has like tons of like gems about how to be a better producer, the like types of leadership, and you know, how do you find out certain issues and things like that. He also has a podcast as well. And so yeah, like that's like one of my learning resources is him, and I think the guy's name is Aaron. I don't want to be wrong about that.
we'll find it. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. But like they have their podcast where they, you know, talk about certain topics and things of that nature. And they have a consulting thing where they'll look at teams and be like, this is what you could be doing better. Like this is like maybe how this could improve. So yeah, I think there are definitely people out there, and I'm pretty sure I've seen some like job postings kind of like that, because sometimes they want them as like a volunteer or something.
Sure.
But yeah, like I think that does exist if I'm hearing you correctly, which was the main point.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that's you or you know someone, get in touch, and then we can share that out as a resource.
Yeah,
because I know, because yeah, I totally believe you. Like, it's someone has to have thought of it and done it. Like, because it does seem kind of like a for that field. Just because of how ignorant a lot of developers are to that, I wouldn't be surprised if the people who do know about it, you know, would have made that effort.
Right.
I'm not at that level yet to be able to consult people. I'm nowhere near that level yet. We need a lot more miles in the tank before we start consulting people.
But yeah. Fair enough. I like your instinct to seek out resources, because it sounds like, I mean, I think your attitude definitely comes off as like, you're not saying you're new at this, but you're it seems like you're really enjoying the process of growing into this position,
yeah,
and into this field.
I love it.
Yeah, and I imagine that takes a lot of like active searching for resources and guides and assistance. So why don't we end off with anything that you'd like to share for folks who are interested in this field? You've already shared some already, but what are the resources or techniques, the things that you would encourage people to seek out to get started in the path that you're on?
Ooh. I have a note for this. I have a personal note for this where I keep like, I call it producer enrichment, so that I can kind of learn more about the craft. Because there's like a couple of videos, like a couple of like free GDC talks that you can look at that kind of like,
ooh, nice,
that kind of like tell you like the idea of it. So there's a video called, what is it called? Actually, you know what? There was a blog that I saw by I forgot what her name is. Her name's Pauline Gepilano. I have the link to it. Mm-hmm. But she just started a blog like this week called Becoming a Game Producer, where like she very well like outlines like what a game producer does.
Oh, cool.
And what kind of skills do you need. So I'd probably start there. There's also this video by Creative Assembly called How to Prepare Yourself for Game Production. Mm-hmm. It's a 45-minute video, and he has his board, and he's like walking through like the different elements of it. And I think that one's a really good one too.
Cool.
Yeah. There's a Timothy Kane video called 5 Traits in a Good Producer. Just kind of get like the skill level of it. But yeah, like it's very, I would say it's very accessible to find. There are lots of people that are generous to share their knowledge and things of that nature. So that's, it's not great. Something that I think is like highly gatekept.
You know? Sure, yeah. Sure. But, yeah, the only barrier is interest.
Yeah, yeah,
probably.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, we'll put all that in the show notes, because I think that'll be great for people to if they're intrigued, to get to next.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's our show. You can find Ryan online on LinkedIn, and we will post that info in the show notes. For those notes and additional links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Ryan tells us it's really good. It's a good website.
Yay. It's very good.
Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and Fallout fun facts. Apply on the various platforms or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. That's where you can support the show and you can get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual or share your opinions or make fun of the hosts, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and you can do all that. Next week, we'll be looking at code libraries and game overs. But that's it for this week.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
How do you make passwords that are strong enough so no one will guess them, you won't forget them, and find a way for everyone in your company to do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible, unless you have 1Password. Companies lose hours every day just from employees forgetting and resetting passwords. A single data breach costs millions of dollars. 1Password secures every sign-in to save you time and money. Any device, anytime. 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. Protect your global workforce with simple security, easy secret sharing, and actionable insight reports. Right now, listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/runoftech for your growing business. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/runoftech today. How do you make passwords that are strong enough so no one will guess them, you won't forget them, and find a way for everyone in your company to do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible, unless you have 1Password. Companies lose hours every day just from employees forgetting and resetting passwords. A single data breach costs millions of dollars. 1Password secures every sign-in to save you time and money. Any device, anytime. 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. Protect your global workforce with simple security, easy secret sharing, and actionable insight reports. Right now, listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/runoftech for your growing business. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/runoftech today.